Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm your co-host, Jeannie Rice, and we welcome you to the show. Today is Friday, Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2014. It's also Aramaic Friday, and so we have Dale Hoffman with us. Our calling number is 646-200-4169. Press 1, and that puts you in queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and your questions, because then that makes this your show. Welcome, Michael.
Well, hello, dear heart. Thank you for that welcome. It's nice to be with you, and we're blessed and we're honored. For everybody that takes the time to tap into the show and join us in this awesome process of understanding, learning, and teaching the ancient Aramaic process of forgiveness. And then today in particular with Aramaic Fridays, we get to get a deeper look and create a deeper foundation into the work of forgiveness from the original Aramaic. You know, if you've ever been in front of two people who speak a foreign language, you know, they're Italian or they're French, and they're trying to say something in English to you, and one of them turns to the other and says, "How do you say such and such?" And they throw their hands up and say, "You can't say that in English. It can't be done. There is so much that can't be said, especially with one word, to bring it out of the Aramaic into the English language. This language is so backwards, so insane. You take a look at the insanity of we've murdered 275 million people on the planet in the last 75 years, and English is the dominant language. You got to say, what's wrong with this picture? What's crazy here? And the craziness is built into the language. The Aramaic language has fantasy built into it. It has understanding of human life built into it. And so we're here to help to resolve the insanity on the planet, and in particular, our own insanity. Jeannie and I have been having a little bit of that this morning as we're going through technology trauma. If anybody here has ever run that number, and we've been doing it now for about 6 days, and you know how consuming it can be. And here we are just 4 days away from heading off to Costa Rica. Didn't need to spend the last 5 days with technology trauma, but that's been our opportunity. And so here we are, and we have Dale Allen Hoffman, and I want to say Dr. Dale Allen Hoffman, because Dale, what you deliver from the Aramaic, the work you've done since we first met in, I think it was 1995, and were introduced to the Aramaic, is just monumental in what you're doing, and I appreciate you, and I offer you the honorary doctorate title of Dr. Dale Hoffman, because you deserve it. Your commitment and your work is not the academic standard, but then if it were the academic standard, it would probably be relatively meaningless. So thank you for doing something meaningful and bringing forward what you're bringing forward to the world. It's such a treasure and such a gift. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I've said it before. It made it sort of a little more challenging and difficult at times by just not going through the systems of theological schools or seminaries, staying outside of the box, not just to stay outside of it, but just to keep any kind of indoctrination out of my heart, or as much as possible, at least. And it makes it more difficult at times when people don't sort of take you seriously. You're not a real one. You're not a real this or that. But in the end, I came out still me, and I'm not imprinted by all kinds of pre-existing notions, ideologies, and concepts. I was able to come through kind of clean and be able to have these really unique perceptions that I wouldn't have gotten, number one, if Aramaic was a native language for me, and number two, I wouldn't have gotten those if I walked in just stepping into the footprints that were already put there, sort of flogging the dead horse, so to speak. So I'm grateful for that. So I'll take an honorary doctorate from just about anywhere. That sounds good. Actually, that's why I went and got my ordination through Universal Life Church, the monastery, because I didn't have to go through some sort of predetermined pattern of programming in order to get it. It was something that happened on a heart level for me. It wasn't something that happened on a read thousands of books, brain level, program the mind, stick all this information in. That's a neat thing. Anybody can do that. If you want to marry somebody or perform some sort of ceremonies legally, just go to Universal Life Church, get your ministerial certificate, and you're on the road. I think you probably find a lot more people coming from a heart-centered place in that way than going through some sort of system.
Well, of course, every system that's set up has its purpose, and its purpose is usually, especially around the Aramaic or similar processes, its system is usually about membership. We have a drive for more members. You know, if you look at most of the religions as they've come down the pike, what do they want? Well, don't have any birth control. We want more babies. We want more population. We want to take over the world. You know, the Roman Church is popular for that. Many of the religions down through the years have used that approach as a way to flood out other populations. It's happening on the planet today. And it's time for us to wake up and recognize that conversion isn't about bringing somebody into our church, but rather conversion is bringing somebody from a fear and hostility-based mind of the world, which, sadly, most of the religions, at least in some circles of each of the religions, promotes very, very widely the fear and hostility around their religion, around God. They couch it in terms, and this is the wolf in sheep's clothing, they couch it in terms of, oh, love, God is love, but he's going to send you to hell if you don't do what I tell you to do, if you don't agree with me. And, you know, you can obey those people for decades, and the minute you stop obeying their infantile goals, all of a sudden, you're going to get written off to hell. Better start to question everything those people have been telling you, because it's all a fraud and it's all a lie. None of it's based in love unless it's based in love. And words based in love produce results based in love. Words based in hostility and fear, as the ancient scriptures say, are doctrines of men. Mm. It's time to get rid of these doctrines. It's time to get rid of all beliefs. All beliefs based in those doctrines, because they're all coming from a tainted mind. They're all a fraud. That's why people live in fear of God, because they've been defrauded. And so when we go back to the Aramaic, what do we find? We find that the starting point of the whole teaching is a word called rachma, a filter in the mind that allows you to stay connected to the active presence of the love of God, and to bring that active presence into your physiology. I don't know where you stand with this idea, Dale, but what I've come to comprehend, and I've never seen it from translation, but just from working with it, is that aside from rachma being a filter in the frontal lobes of the brain that keeps the mind on track and keyed into or supplied with power by love, but I've come to experientially understand that it is literally the gateway through which human life, and Of course, our definition of human life is an experiential one. Hold a newborn child, you know exactly what human life is. Rachma, I've come to understand, is the gateway into which human life enters this form that can be run by all the brainwashing and programming of the religions and the so-called educational institutions and the ways of the world. How does that fit for you?
It's one of the things I always say, and I'm glad I started with your perspective of the work, that I didn't jump right into some school-type atmosphere of it, because it's really enabled me to see things that I couldn't have seen if I was... It's an amazing thing. It gets me thinking about, and I've mentioned it before, Howard Thurman, where he said, don't seek what the world needs and seek to fill that need. Do what makes you come alive, because what the world needs now is people who have come alive. And that makes me think of Rachma, in that it's not about relaying, it's not just about relaying information, it's about the presence that's laced into the information. It's about bringing it from the heart. It's about bringing it into the heart. And it's funny that those moments when Rachma is just completely coursing through me, when I'm really in those states in teaching or whatever, it happened this last weekend in New Jersey, a retreat I did with Dr. LaChance, with Albert, and we did a water blessing and an anointing on Friday night for everyone. It was about 20 people. And when I'm in that state, people, you know, afterwards, later that night, and then especially the next morning, and people were sending messages saying, how do you do that? What is that? What's going on? What's your technique? And I'm like, I have no technique. I know what it feels like. I know what Rachma feels like. That doesn't necessarily, I know what Rachma is. I can break it down linguistically and tell you, you know, what the sounds that comprise the word mean, but that's still not it. And, it's that's when I'm in those moments, that's when I know that things are really cooking, so to speak. And that's why I always say that I sit in the back of your events so that I can sit on my hands, you know, because I don't want to do a backflip off the front row and freak people out, because I can feel that energy when you get in the flow. I recognize that flow, and it's like I almost want to jump up in the middle of the room and scream at the top of my lungs in some sort of ecstasy or something. It's amazing. It's just like that in still point breath work. It's in the forgiveness process when you actually get it and you get to the end and you actually cancel that goal, and then you put, you know, you set that intention, well, the goal of putting love into that space, you know, bringing it into your heart. There's nothing like it. That's to me, when I translate, that's what excites me. It's when Rachma is revealed. It's that revelation of looking at the same line for years and years and years and years and years, and then all of a sudden, pop, it wakes up and it lights me up. And then when I relay that to other people, it's not the information that lights them up. It's Rachma. It's the energy. It's the presence. It's the love. It's the greatest thing about what I do, and that's why I'm so honored to be doing it, because I sort of get to have a real, authentic buzz for much of my life. Instead of needing chemicals, I just get it from within.
Well, I love the word, the way you put that. It's laced into the information, that the active, actual presence of love is laced into the information. And two thoughts that come forward as you say that are, one, many people in the world talk about the heart like they're talking about a physical organ somewhere, you know, inside their chest as the source of it all. And anyone who talks about the head is poo-pooed and, oh, well, you're off base. The truth is, it starts in the head. It starts in the frontal lobes of the brain with Rachma. There's Yeshua's, you know, what's the first law? You've got to have this filter active in order to guide the perceptual output of your mind. Ultimately, it's the starting point. So that must be there. And lacing it with that, I think what's going to change the insanity of war on the planet. I mentioned, and I don't know whether you were on the show or not the other day, but I mentioned Thomas Jefferson. And, you know, as much of a genius as he was, that he was one of the people who sourced the Constitution that, you know, to date has never been present on the planet. You know, if you look at every country in the world, to date, every country has been controlled. And Jefferson and his friends set forward a way of overthrowing and removing that control, the control of tyrants, the people who can't produce true production as human beings, make a life study of how to crawl up on the back of others who are producing and take over their control. They're generally called kings. Mm. And there are anthems and there is music and there are parades to get everybody to honor and quote-unquote love the king. And, you know, if you've got a king that happens to be benevolent, that's pretty cool. But they're not very common. You know, if you look at royalty today on the planet, their money came from drugs, from suffering, from horrendous things. Nothing to do with Rothman, nothing to do with human life. And so when Jefferson says the words, you certainly understand what he was fighting against was the control on the planet. It's the same control that the educational or so-called educational institutions exert over their students in wanting them to be brainwashed in a certain way, churches brainwashed in a certain way, rather than the truth of human life to show up. So the quote I brought forward of Jefferson, which runs the world for a whole lot of people, is one that says, my phone just rang and I had to delete the call. It removed my screen. Anyway, just give me 1 second here. So Jefferson says, the tree of liberty, this is a quote I used the other day, and I think you just kind of re-stimulated that for me. The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Mm. And, you know, he's telling us the truth. As long as we are run by non-human life, as long as our world is not laced with human life, as you put it, Dale, then we're going to be in perpetual war. Because sooner or later, the peons are going to get tired of the police state. Peons are going to get tired of being controlled and run and being ripped off for everything they've earned. And the people who've learned how to rip them off have been studying for centuries. It's been refined. It's passed from generation to generation how to convince the peons they should give up all of their wealth and turn it over to the overlord and just be satisfied with their bread because someday Jesus is going to come and save them. And that's all just a lie. That's all just a fraud. Unless we get enough individuals. Now, I believe Jefferson is right. He's telling us the truth. We are condemned to perpetual war until human life shows up on the earth. And with the awakening of human life, especially in the political arena, where love replaces greed, and every word and every behavior and every thought and every action is laced with the active presence of human life, we have the alternative to perpetual war. And I believe that that's exactly what Yeshua was attempting to deliver us to us 2,000 years ago. How does that fit for you, Dale?
You know, speaking of the word heart, and I think of, it's funny how most people in America, I'll hear things like all these different things, like America was founded on Christianity. I hear all these phrases that are so untrue. People just don't, number one, they don't really in America read our actual history. We don't actually study the history. Another one of those things, I didn't realize it was not until well into my 20s that I found out that all the history books in terms of what we were at the time calling Indians or Native Americans, that what was in the history books wasn't even true. It was stuff that was written by the newspaper reporters to sell, to be able to get linked into the Associated Press and the different wire services at the time so they'd get more famous and make more money. Didn't know that at the time. It wasn't until the mid-90s that we started recalibrating our history. And I think of what it really kind of lit up for me was the word heart. Heart is an interesting word. We talked a little bit about it last week, a little bit the week before. Liba. Leba or Liba, depending on the pronunciation. If it's my heart, it would be Libak. There's so many different places where there's really not a lot of places where the word Liba comes up in the teachings of Jesus. It really only comes up at least in the canonical Gospels. It only comes up in a few places. It's an interesting word, Liba, though, because it doesn't only mean heart, as in the beating heart in your chest. It has a couple other meanings in Aramaic. It means to seize. sees as in to realize or comprehend something, to take hold, to behold something. And what that brings up for me is, I believe it's Mark 10, it might be 10:52, I'm thinking, where Yeshua, it was one of the places where he was healing a man, and the guy that was classified as deaf, dumb, and blind, I believe, is the way people usually speak of it, theologians. And he went through a little bit of a ritual in terms of what he was doing for the guy, I believe, so that the guy would believe that he actually had powers, although he really, just when you're in Rachma, that essence happens, the healing happens, because in the words of Ernest Holmes, there's nothing to heal, there's only truth to be revealed. That's a huge realization. When you come from the heart, everything is as it should be, as, on earth as it is in heaven. And but he said the phrase chzi ha'imanutach achayatach to that man. And that word chzi, which is chzi in Aramaic, doesn't mean see as in look at something. What it actually means is much like what the word heart means. It means behold, seize, comprehend, take hold of, realize, bring, you know, get into the deepest depth of awareness of this. And it's interesting as well that the word that was translated as has made you whole or has healed you, it's the same word as life, save, it's achayatak. The root of that is chaya. The kuh sound at the end means you or yours again. But that chaya sound in the middle is, again, conscious life energy. I talk of it all the time. You're not saved. It's not salvation. You're not even made whole, and it's not even a healing. In fact, it's the realization that you are whole. You are complete. The Baha'i faith says we start from completion. We were born whole and complete, and then essentially we fell asleep. When you come from Rachma, when you come from the heart, when you're coming from conscious, active, present love, you're coming from your true being. And what he's saying to this guy is, look, understand, comprehend, behold, seize the realization that when you come from the true nature of your being, from Rachma, from conscious, active, present love, with the eyes that see and the ears that hear, when you come from the eye that is single, not only will your body be full of light, but you realize you were never sick in the first place. You realize that you are whole, you are complete. And that unveils that word faith. Faith today means it's you have faith in something. It's like you have the faith in a Bible, in a belief system, ideology, person, whatever it may be. It didn't mean that 2,000 years ago. That word ha'imanutach, in this case, it's ha'imanutach. It's got the kuh sound at the end because it's possessive. It's yours, he was saying. Ha'imanutach, or ha'imanuta. Ta genders it feminine. It means an attitude. It's a perception. It's a state of being. The u sound is the action. It's that which happens. It's like ing in English. The aman in the middle of the word is that it's a Coptic Egyptian root, although we don't know where it comes from in the Coptic. We know it was in Coptic. It may have come from Sumerian or Akkadian or an older language. But iman means from this rooted center, and then the sound at the beginning, chaya, means conscious life energy. So the word faith, it's not something you have faith in. It's rather consciously acting from the rooted center of your being. When you come from the rooted center, you birth from Rachma. The hum sound in the middle means inner womb or center point of being, much like iman. When you come from your center, you come from the first beginning, you come from the head, not born again, but meteli mandrish, drish or dresh is the word head. When you come from the head, the beginning, you realize that the one who takes their place in the beginning will know the end and they will not taste death. They will not experience sickness and illness. And that's why I love it when I'll call you and you'll be like, how you doing? I'm like, oh, I'll see you. Oh, I got a sniffle. He's like, oh, yay, let's celebrate. And it's like, what the, you know, healing crisis. It took years for me to be able to, and of course I would laugh with you, ha, ha, ha. And then you'd leave the room and I go, what's up with that? Man, can't I get a break on this? And then I finally went, oh, hold on a second. Obviously, it's not what you're saying, it's something inside of me. So I started digging inside, and I started going, hey, wait a second. I believe in the lie. I'm believing the illusion. I'm believing the illusion that let's put it back into the American sense, that somehow a dysfunctional economy, politics, religion, and the mess that we've created in so many ways, that somehow this is the way things are supposed to be, and they have to be that way. And it's easy for me to even go on an opposite side of that and look at it negatively and get locked into the negativity of it. Whereas if I just come back, again, in the Ernest Holmes sense, religious science, science of mind sense, realize there's nothing to heal, only truth to be revealed, I come back to my center, that's when my body will be full of light because I will see clearly. I'm no longer stuck between good and bad, positive and negative, light and dark, masculine and feminine, whatever that may be. I'm not in the judgment anymore. I'm in the place where it's whole and it is complete, and we come from that. And that's, if there's anything we need to do in this world, it's to get back to Rachma. It's to get back to the center. It's to get back to our true nature, our real analog, as you say, nature, that light at the center of our being. The more we live from that, the world literally will take care of itself, but it won't take care of itself if I'm pointing at the other guy saying, this is your fault, or it's that somehow external circumstance. It's up to each of us to come from that place. That's why that's something that I'm so, again, I say it probably in every show, I'm just so thankful and I have such great honor and gratitude that I started with that. My first experience of Aramaic was Why Again in Clearwater, Florida in 95, and the feeling that I had while you were speaking, it lit me up. You could have peeled me off the ceiling. As a matter of fact, I doubt you remember it, but I remember you saying it to me later that summer. You were like, Dale, I could have peeled you off the ceiling that day, and I'm like, I'm sure you could have. Because I was lit up. That's what it's all about for me in the end. Even when I do talks today and people want to get locked into the words, I'm like, let go of the words. Open yourself up to the experience. When you let it come from the heart, that place where thought and feeling merge together, everything really takes care of itself. To me, that's the beauty of life, is coming from the center, because we're all one at the center, truly.
You mean we're back to the simplest idea of function as a human being? Is that what you said?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly, yeah, a human being, not a human doing. Exactly.
Right. Cool. Well, have you got anything else to share, or should we ask Jeannie if anything's happening in the phone queue?
I think if we've got callers, that would be great, because we kind of have been going right to the last microsecond lately. It would be nice to have some people in a little earlier. The two of us get going.
Cool,
it's hard to stop us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we do have Dr. Tim on, and then we also have Rex on. And other than them, nobody has their hand up.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, Dale and Michael and Dr. Tim and Jeannie and the whole listening crew.
Hey there, good show.
Hello. Hello.
Well, Dale, I haven't had the opportunity in this series this year to thank you for all the wonderful work you're doing on the planet. And just to give you a little reflection from my perception, you have, based on what I'm experiencing, listening to your voice and feeling how you are intoning the truth in your frequencies of your modulations of your voice. Just to give you that mirror, it's very, very obvious to me that you are doing some very profound, deep level work inside, because regardless of the words you say, all I do is listen to your vibration. And it's just it resonates inside me. So I'm just sharing that with you as a personal experience, and I thank you for all of it, everything. Plus all the knowledge that you bring to the table. I'm fascinated with listening to you and having the opportunity to hear what you have to say.
Thank you for the kind words. You know, people often say to me, they're like, how do you hold all that information in your head? I'm like, you know what? I don't hold it in my head. This is what lights me up. This is what makes me come alive. It's what just makes me want to stand on my rooftop with a 10,000-watt PA system and scream at the top of my lungs in ecstasy, is because it's what lights me up. And I don't have to hold it in my head. It's my passion, and it just comes through. It's funny because if you had asked me when I was a kid that I would be doing something like this, I probably would have looked at you like you were some kind of a lunatic. For some reason, though, even from the age of 7, I was reading the Bible front to back. It felt comfortable, but I always felt outside the box and awkward because I always felt like I had a different view than other people did. And I never at that time, of course, when you're seven, you don't think, oh, well, I've got a superior view. You think something's wrong. I'm not seeing it right. Everybody else seems to see the same thing. I see something different. And I thought that was a curse at first, but it took me a while to realize that, it was coming from a place of that light of the passion that, you know, there's a phrase in the Gospel of Thomas where Yeshua says that the heavens and the earth will be rolled up in your presence. That word rolled up in Coptic, it means literally threaded into the fiber of your being like threads of a carpet. And to me, it's more about that. It's more about the energy, the presence, the light than it is about the information. And I can say that to people until I'm blue in the face. And most, I'll say, usually, most don't get it, but some do. And the ones that do, it really makes it worth it, that it's not about remembering facts. It's about presence, period, love, real love. So thank you.
You're so welcome, and you appear to be exhibiting that. So I appreciate that, and thank you for that. I do have a specific question. I'm doing work in the prisons. I'm teaching the Laws of Living course, as Michael and Dan McDougall has put together, and I'm working with the Michigan Reformatory and the Ionia Prisons. We've been working in there, me and my partner, or my partner and I, Michelle Fiché, and we've been working on every Tuesday all day up until about 3 o'clock from 8 in the morning. We're working with two groups, and these guys are really awesome. I mean, we're having just amazing breakthroughs for all of us, I mean, as facilitators and especially the inmates. And a question came up, and I told them that, you know, I talk about the radio program. I talk about how we talk about the inmates. And we have that devotion time, 5 minutes or 12:55 and 8 p.m. every day. We do a devotion where we just presence love and extend that to all of our friends, family members, and extend it into our communities and to the entire planet and all of creation. So it's a conscious meditation we're doing every day. And there, many of them now are doing it with us. And I bring that up again because it's always beneficial because I let them know that we are bringing them into our devotion consciously and intentionally, and they are deeply touched by that. Somebody is remembering them. So I wanted to reiterate that. But the question that came up in the discussion we were having is the conversation about fearing God, how the King James Version of Scriptures has been interpreted as that we should fear God. And it's actually written in the Quran, according to their input to me. I'm not a student of the Quran. I know that you've studied many of the different works out there, including especially the Bible. So my question to you would be, I told them that I gave them my best shot, that it was something that was actually taking place was, it was the minds that were writing the documents were based in fear. And so then they would perceive through that fear content, and that's what they would write. And I believe that it was off. And I cannot give you the accurate information as to what the Aramaic interpretation is, but I'll ask Dale Allen Hoffman if it opens up, and he's going to be on the program every Friday, and they got really excited about that. So that's why I'm asking.
You know,
so before you get into it, Dale, let me just offer, Rex, that every time that somebody asks that question, because it's so prevalent, it will come up all the time, especially for people who are in Laws of Living, I would suggest you refer them to the front page, the title page of the Laws of Living course, where, and I don't remember exactly, I'm not real good at chapter and verse, but where the quote is from the Old Testament that says, "Fear of God is a doctrine of men." I don't think we really need to go further. Certainly getting the improper translation recognized, but go back to that. It's right on the front page. I put it there because it's such a prevalent question. The fear of God is the doctrine of man.
Yeah, you're referring to, and the Lord said, "Inasmuch as these people draw near with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men." And I did address that. Is that what you're referring to, Michael?
Yeah, it's right in the front of the Laws of Living book. Right,
yeah,
in the front.
What I just read?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that is a quote. But what I'm asking, and I agree with you, but I'm asking if Dale has a interpretation that comes from the phrases more accurately assessed, because they were asking, they said it in the Quran, it's specific. Michelle wrote it down. If she's on the program, she writes things down for me while I'm teaching. And she wrote the actual Quran verse and section that it was in, and I cannot recall it right now. Maybe she's on the program, she could share it. But that would be something that would be helpful. But that's my question to you, Dale, as well. And, yes, Michael, I agree. It is what I said. It's being taught by men who are fearful. And so,
it doesn't say, Rex, it doesn't say just that it's taught by men. What it says is it's a doctrine of men. It's even deeper than it's taught by men. I mean, if somebody, it's a whole doctrine that was made up out of the non-being mind, out of the mind based in hostility or fear. And I think that's an important point for people to get, to move beyond, of course, the mind based in hostility and fear. But yes, there is certainly a whole other level of understanding from the Aramaic, and I'll leave Dale to talk about that.
In terms of the Quran, if I saw the... like as an example, if you were to give me a pronunciation or at least even the Quranic word, the Arabic word, I could probably could recognize the roots of it in terms of meanings. What I will say is the word, it's interesting. There's a word that was translated as fear. It's a similar word in Hebrew. It was translated as fear in some of the New Testament as well. That doesn't mean fear. The proper words for fear in Aramaic are kanat. Kanat is one of them. Shachar is another word for fear. There's a few different words for fear. But one of the words that was mistranslated as fear is the word tedkal, tedkul. And let me just break that part. This is one of the ones that was mistakenly translated as fear. I don't know that it was mistakenly translated. I just don't think they had the eyes to see. The kul sound.
I think
tedkal,
it was purposely done.
Yeah.
I think it was purposely done by men to keep people under control, because when you've got fear, you can't achieve the condition that we were talking about in the whole first half of the show, Rachman. The two filters are mutually incompatible. But I think it was purposely done by men.
And if you tell people to fear the one thing that is the realization of life itself, of course you keep them in the box. That word, I mentioned this, I would say go back. I don't know if it was the last show or maybe the one before. I talked about it a little more. Maybe it was a couple shows ago, a little more in depth, so I'm just going to kind of just hit a couple aspects this time. First of all, the kul sound or the kul sound at the second half of the word means whole or full. Sometimes I'll see it translate or see the word as tedkhul as well or tedkhul. The chud sound in the middle means one. The kul sound means whole or full, in other words, all being. And then the tid sound in the beginning is an interesting word, the T and the D. I'm saying T and D in English, the Tet and Dalet in Aramaic. When you've got those two letters together, it's at the beginning of, as an example, when Yeshua says Tidrakim, which is one of the words for, or Detrakim's another form. When he says love your neighbor as yourself, that word is Detrakim or Tidrakim, depending on which text you're looking at. That sound means, what it means is to radiate something, to come from something, almost like to have like a psychic megaphone. So what's interesting about this is that what that word tedkal actually means is to be whole body, to be whole being, and to send literally to almost be like a megaphone of wholeness. Interesting. The way I explain this is, and I did this a couple of weeks ago on the show, I talked about a mother and there's a child coming, or their child is on the edge of the road and all of a sudden there's a car rushing and the car's doing, 50 miles an hour on a residential street and their child is out in the middle of the road. The mother just wide open launches, goes 30 feet in like half of a second, grabs the child back, and I often ask, when does the fear actually set, or when does the fear set in? People say, well, it sets in after. And I say what tedkal or tedkul is, it's that feeling or that state of being that happens when she's going toward the child. It's not an actual fear yet, in fact. It's actually the body being wide open, completely whole, and firing on all cylinders. It's exactly what you'll see at the Sochi Olympics right now. You'll see people, when they get into the zone, like the skater from Japan the other day, he was so whole and so present that he did things that literally look impossible, especially to someone who isn't coming from that space, that don't know the moves quite so well, that they've transcended the technique itself. Another version of this would be, every once in a while you'll hear about a child pinned under a car, and this little tiny 90-pound mother lifts the car up and pulls the kid out with one hand. Again, that's Ted Kuhl. Ted Kuhl is not a fear. It's actually our body functioning at a very, very – it's not even the physical body, but our energy system functioning in absolute high clarity. The best word would be coherence, where all of the systems are in absolute harmony with each other, and you're firing on all cylinders. That's when we do these superhuman feats. That's what I feel when I hear Michael speak, or I hear Albert LaChant speak, or my friend Marcus Bishop. There's some people that just completely light me up. Bob Dylan singing "The Times They Are a-Changin'" or "Blowing in the Wind." The Beatles on Ed Sullivan, that's all Ted Kuhl. It's a whole being experience that transcends the human body. When the energy system is just in an absolute state of perfect harmonic coherence. And unfortunately, so what that was really saying is to be in absolute coherence, to be one with God, to realize that you are the one manifest in what appears to be a human form in your energy system, your body temple, as opposed to fear. And you can't mince what's there in the letters and the roots. It had to be really, thinking about it, it had to be intentional. Because they don't mean anything else. Those roots don't have other meanings. Those are what they mean, and that's what they meant even 2,000, 3,000 years ago. Those root meanings of those words haven't changed at all. So it had to be a manipulation, and it's a weird thing because in some Semitic study circles, they know that, and they'll still preach that ideology of fear, including with that word. And those are the things that irk me. When I see someone translate a word in a footnote, say, look, this is what it really means, and then when they put it in the text, they translate it in that ideological way that's so limiting and constraining. It's one of the reasons why I have to do what I do, and when I'm in the face of something like that, I go back to my center. I don't try to fight against it. I come back to my center. I come from that state of Tadkul, that whole being. Rachma comes through, and what happens. I mean, and I believe in the end that what's going to win people over, so to speak, is that when push comes to shove with myself and maybe it's another scholar, they may be flying off the handle and screaming until their eyes bug out of your head. And yes, it happens quite often in scholarly circles. That's why I left it. But what's going to speak isn't the information that I'm portraying. Again, it's that presence. And if I'm able to come from a place of presence, observers are going to go, hey, wait a second, obviously he must have something more accurate than what they do, because they're flipping out and screaming at the top of their lungs in a very hostile way. Again, like Michael said, coming from fear and hostility, and this guy's coming from love. So obviously something is more accurate with what he's saying. And to me, that's what it all boils down to. It's not our actions, it's not our information. It's the energy of it. And so basically that's it. It meant to be one with, whole with, and firing on all cylinders in absolute coherence, not only in the body, but with the absolute, with actuality, with God. It's the exact opposite of fear. Exact 180-degree perfect opposite.
That's a
wonderful explanation. Let me just see if I get this clear. I mean, I really like to sound like a healed record. You're saying function as a human being. Is that the bottom line of it?
Yeah, I think I'm back to that again. Yes, that's exactly it.
As a newborn, have an experience, live in that experience, and everything else is handled. We don't even need any words once we get to that. But then, of course, men made up all kinds of stories to keep us out of it. Excuse me, Rex, go ahead.
I appreciate that, because that's the feeling and that's the experience I had
but because I don't have the background to the depth that you both do have in the Aramaic, I gave my answer, and it was resonant with what you're describing. It's just a much better description now. I have a much different comprehension of what they were inferring in that scripture and how it was interpreted differently.
I would say download the show, listen to it over and over, but remember one thing, and I think you've already got this, but it's not about coming back with strong information. It's about your presence. It's about conscious, active, present love. Understanding, like when people come to me and they want to know what information they can give for someone that says this or someone that says that, and I say, don't, never mind the information. If you come from that conscious, active, present love, come from Rachma, you come from as an actual, real, high-fidelity human being, the information doesn't even matter, actually, in fact, because a lot of times people without eyes that see and ears that hear, they'll hear the information, and you'll say one thing, and they'll hear the exact opposite, and they won't comprehend it anyway. So really, in the end, it's, and you've got this already, it's not the information, it's about the presence, it's about love, it's about that. That's what really speaks to people's hearts.
Awesome. And I had one other thought to ask you, Dale. One of the things I've noticed, because I take notes, I've got a whole pad full of Aramaic Friday information, and when you're tuning into words and you're identifying words, if you could give us a spelling for those words, it would be easier for us to research them and also be able to offer them more intentionally.
Yeah, I could do that. It probably wouldn't help much in research because it's a transliteration, meaning that I'm using English letters to pronounce something that's not English. As an example, most of the scholars, when they use like the wall, which is the letter, it's kind of like a letter W and an O and a U combined in Aramaic. It's the U sound. Most scholars use a U, but I use two O's, actually, which is what Archdeacon Shamoon used to do when he would transliterate into English from the Assyrian Church of the East, because it's closer to two O's than it is to a U. So I can say, as an example, Ruka is R-O-O-K-H-A, and you might find some references to Ruka, but you may also find references to Ruka as R-U-K-H-A, or even R-U-H-A, or R-O-O, or R-U-K-A. So it would help in terms of people remembering the sounds, but in terms of research, you probably hit a lot of dead ends
Thank
in
you that for
way.
That clarification. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that clarifies that. But I would still appreciate, one of the things that I heard in the, at least in my interpretation in my on an energetic level, when you were saying the word tadhul, it resonated with the last phrase of the Aramaic prayer, nadal dalku. Is that similar?
Which Aramaic prayer are you talking about? You're saying the Lord's prayer?
Yes, thank you. The Lord's prayer, the last sentence.
The last
and
sentence?
Heard it, the last sentence in the Lord's prayer.
I'm trying to think if there's a tool. What's that?
It sounds similar to what you were saying about fear embodying the love, and it has the way I have been learning it. It's Nadal de la Cou or Nadal. You say it differently, and I've heard your phrase, the way you say it, and then there's a number of other people that say it differently. I've taken more of the way of mastery and tried to emulate that way of
saying. Yeah, what I would say, and I do love, I love, how can I put it cleanly? I do love JM's work. He's great. He really understands a lot, but his Aramaic stuff is completely, I know the word you're thinking of. It's riddled with mispronunciations. He uses the wrong words. He'll, like as an example, say being fully present in this moment is bisha, which is actually the word evil, which means unripe, not in the present moment. The information he relays is great. When he starts talking about information or pronouncing it, it's really far out of whack. And I've reached my hands out to the organization many times saying that, you know, I, in absolute humility, would love to help him in any way, shape, or form, and I've never gotten responses. But I think the word that you're thinking of is Wahaila Watishbukta.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it sort of has some of the roots there. Yeah, it has some of the roots, but I mean, it's not exactly yet. That word wahaila is actually that word chaya, which is strength, virtue, willingness, as an example. And all what the law sound just means is in movement. It's something that's moving. It's going outward. In other words, a strength that radiates out, which is what it is there. But yeah, it's a different route actually. But yeah, I can see now. That's a good thing though. That's a good ear. It's that will serve you better than sort of the words on the page will, to keep your ears open. I think that's one of the things that's been one of the blessings that I've had in the last couple decades, is that I can see the roots of certain words that other people maybe haven't recognized, including ones that are that's in their own language. Like I can go up to somebody that's born and raised English, speaking English, and they don't even know what most of the words even mean. It's exactly the same in Aramaic, and unfortunately, in the 18th and 19th centuries, one of the ways that Syriac and some of the Assyrian and Aramaic languages were brought back was they would actually lay their Aramaic Bibles next to the King James Bible. So what they were actually translating wasn't coming from the original meanings of the first century. It was coming from the Middle English 14th, 15th, 16th, 17th century meanings. So unfortunately, there's a lot of Aramaic speakers today who are actually, even in their language, thinking of it from a perspective of King James English, unfortunately, rather than the first century meanings. And that's one of the challenges that I come up against sometimes, is telling people, you know, all I'm asking is that you be open. Just be open to something greater. But when you tune into the sounds, you'll start hearing those roots. And that's one, like if someone comes up to me on the road and they've got a word that maybe I'm not overly familiar with, if they say it really slow and I hear what the root sounds are, I can at least give them the gist of it. And that's what's great about Aramaic. It's not like English. The sounds mean something, and they have a certain set of meanings. You put those sounds together, you've got the word. So if you know what the sounds mean, you can define literally any word. And that's actually one of the things that makes it so beautiful. It's almost like a puzzle language in that way. So,
well, you express it so well, and I was the word for heart Liba?
Liba, yeah.
Liba.
You can say L-I-B-A, basically, Liba, or L-E-B-A, Liba, yes.
Well, I take it to Liba, the information about the Lord's Prayer in Aramaic from the JM experience, and what I'd ask you is, do you have other than just reciting it, do you have anything that might be phonetic in the way that it's truly meant to be spoken?
Yeah, I've got an actual CD that's called Learn to Speak and Intone the Lord's Prayer. And also, I do, with that CD comes, it has a booklet that's attached to it. And the booklet's also on my website. It's a PDF book that you can print, that has all of the specific pronunciations and the meanings of each of the words. So it not only teaches you how to speak it and tone it, it also teaches you what each of the words means, and it writes out not only what it looks like in Estrangella Aramaic, but it writes out the pronunciations, yeah.
Awesome. Then I will definitely go on the site and order that.
Yeah, if you go on my website and click on it's on either iTunes or CD Baby. You can get that one, or the full set that I have. It comes in the full set as well, which is available through my web store. So,
awesome. And also, just for your benefit, I didn't take JM's interpretation of the Lord's Prayer when I was sharing with the inmates. I took yours.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be different than based on what you're saying. And that was one of the conflicts I had with Bisha, because I knew what that meant, and it was different than from JM. So
yeah, well, I will say
that
he's got the heart of it. He's got the understanding. It's just the words and the pronunciations are off. But he's got eyes that see, and his heart is so beautiful, and it radiates beautifully. Yeah, it's just the challenge is that when someone's out either adding a lot of artistic license to the meanings beyond what they actually mean, or mispronouncing and using wrong words, it makes it a little more difficult for all of us. So most people won't reach out. You know, I'm reaching out because to me it's about all of us together. a lot of scholars would just pound on that, you know, that's not what I'm here for. So.
And what you just exampled is what's happened throughout history.
Put it into 2,000, 3,000 years. It's like Past the Secret with a bunch of five-year-olds. It starts with a blue car driving down the street, and it ends up as a pink elephant exploded as it fell black backward off a cliff. It doesn't resemble what was there in the beginning, so that's in five minutes.
Well, thank you, Dale. I know there's
Absolutely.
Still 5 or 6 minutes left on the call, but I did want to ask one last thing. Michael's coming up in October, and Mitzi, my partner, my life partner, and I would love to sponsor you and bring you into Lansing area.
Michigan?
Yes, Lansing, Michigan.
Beautiful. I'll be in Kalamazoo, and I think it's in April. I'd love to contact me. It's easy to get on my website, click contact, and then it clicks, and it'll send me an email. I'd love to come up.
Well, we did that, but we haven't heard back from you, and it's been a month or so, a month and a half.
Really?
So.
I haven't seen it. What the problem is, we've got sometimes it doesn't forward right to my inbox because it goes from – we have problems with our server GoDaddy, and sometimes I don't get the messages that I'm supposed to be getting. If you just email ashevillesouls@yahoo.com, ashevillesouls at Yahoo, that'll get to me. ashevillesouls@yahoo.com. It's more common than it should be that I don't get the messages I'm supposed to. So.
Well, then we'll get right on that, so expect that to come today.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Wonderful. Thank you again.
Absolutely. Thank you, Rex.
Blessing.
Awesome. And one of the things to add to the discussion just before Jeannie pops in is we need to recognize when people are talking about the Quran that we're talking about a text that was originally delivered in Aramaic, not in Arabic. Now, I know that's not a commonly held piece of information, very much like everybody. I mean, I actually have a friend who's a priest who went to a big conference in Italy, I believe it was Italy, back a couple of years ago. And it was religious leaders, so-called religious leaders from all over the world. And he ran into a man who was very high up in one of the Protestant churches in America, like, you know, an archbishop-type position. And this guy, now my friend was working with me on the Aramaic New Testament and the Kabbalist manuscript. And this fellow, high up in one of the Protestant churches, said to him that he had firsthand knowledge that the Bible was written by Jesus' brother John in English.
Oh, that's rich. That's a good one.
And if you go throughout the whole Greek-based scholarly world, everybody will tell you it was Greek. And Yeshua would agree. If he sat in most churches today, he'd say, that's all Greek to me. So the Aramaic origins are denied because if you put people in touch with the original, you can't control them. Quran, sadly, isn't much different. It was originally Aramaic. Do your homework. Maybe you have some comments about that. And I know we're down to a couple of minutes, and Jeannie's got to, we're down to a minute and a half. I better let Jeannie.
Let me answer. I want to say something real quick. I'm not even in relation to that. On YouTube, I'm not sure if you're aware of it. His name is Harry MacD. He's got a YouTube channel, and there's interviews on there. There's like 6 segments of interviews with Judge Asa Kelly and Dan McDougald on there talking about the Aramaic. What I'll do, Michael, is I'll send them to you. I'll email the link of those to you as soon as I get off here because they're fascinating interviews to watch. The two of them together, and anybody that's read the Kabbalist Enlightenment, of course, you know who I'm talking about. They're fascinating interviews. And I'm not so sure if you knew they were on there or not.
Dan was amazing, and Judge Kelly's the closest thing to a saint I've ever seen. Maybe we'll talk about him next Friday.
Cool,
and in the meantime,
cool.
We've got to close the show, and I know there's more on the phone line and in the chat room, but we are out of time. Thank you again for Aramaic Fridays, Dale. You're a blessing. DaleAllenHoffman.com is his website. Touch into his material. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. It's the greatest gift you can give to the planet. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com.
Evolving continuously.